Welcome to the fourth class. I look forward to this class. We're going to continue a good bit of the focus from the last class. The focus is on healing, transforming, on elements of mourning pain. Share some understanding about what is the nature of pain and what happens when we transform. So that's the general focus. And it'll be, as before, going to engage in exercises, and I may ask for a participant to volunteer for me to guide you through an exercise on mourning. You have two handouts. One is the exercise on mourning, and the other one is titled Compassionately Embracing, which is a number about 8 different phases in this. It's very similar to mourning, but has more specific aspects to it. So that's a quick overview. I'd just like to begin by asking everyone, as a centering meditation, intention of which is to become present, to become conscious of your body, if you would take a few moments to close your eyes and bring your attention gently to your awareness, your inner awareness, and to the body. Bring a full and clear and gentle awareness to the body. Allow the breathing to flow. Feel the sensation of the breath going in and coming out. Notice any holding or tensions, any knots, blocks in your experiencing. And just take note of them. Don't do anything with them. There's nothing to do, but just notice and bring a simple awareness to any part of your experience where there's tension or holding. Any part of your experience where there is a thinking, a story, the narrative, the ongoing narrative that goes on in the mind, just allow it to flow. And feel all of your experiencing as life energy, as the life force. As a life force, it is something very basic, very essential. And it is modified in the forms of our thinking, our emotional feeling, our sensing, given expression through our behaviors, our acts, and our words. It is all the life force moving in and through us. When there is a flow, there is an openness in the mind as far as allowing all the thinking, being open-minded, an openness in the heart, allowing the flow of all feelings, whether the mind judges them as positive or negative, and an openness in the body, as a relaxed presence. Intend, if you will, before I ask you to come out of the meditation, for the duration of this class, to be centered and grounded in your heart, in the basic life energy. I'm going to share a reading. If you care to open your eyes or be ready to, in a receptive mode, to hear the reading. This is an excerpt from Khalil Gibran on pain. Your pain is the breaking of the shell that encloses your understanding. even as the stone of the fruit must break, that its heart may stand in the sun, so must you know pain. And could you keep your heart in wonder at the daily miracles of your life, your pain would not seem less wondrous than your joy. And you would accept the seasons of your heart even as you have always accepted the seasons that pass over your fields. And you would watch with serenity through the winters of your grief. Much of your pain is self-chosen. It is the bitter potion by which the physician within you heals your sick self. Therefore, trust the physician and drink his remedy in silence and tranquility. For his hand, though heavy and hard, is guided by the tender hand of the unseen. And the cup he brings, though it burn your lips, has been fashioned of the clay which the potter has moistened with his own sacred tears. For me, this reading touches, resonates, and opens the possibility of coming to the experience that we call pain, coming to the experience perhaps underneath, within the associations, the past experiences of what we call pain, in an open way, in a new way, in an absolutely new way, so that we have a different experiential understanding of pain, which is different than an intellectual understanding of it. So there is a coming to this pain, and there is a kind of training. There is a discipline in coming to this pain. And the discipline is we do something different than what we're used to. We do something different than our conditioning. We do something different than the tendency to protect and guard ourselves against what we imagine to be the experience of pain. And so what we end up doing is something different than riding it, than judging it, than creating conceptual understandings in which we push it down. We stop trying to be safe, and we open to it, allow it. And then we come to the experience without any thoughts, without any definition or meaning. It's possible to come to what could be called the pure physicality of the energy of pain and relax and come to it over again and breathe and say yes to the impulse that's going in and through our human form. The more we do this as a practice, the more we can bring a quality of self-care and kindness to ourselves. And the more we live in this inner spaciousness of kindness to our own inner experience, the more we bring the inner spaciousness of kindness to others in all of our relationships. It's a way of living. So this understanding of pain, experiential understanding, does not come easy in the sense that it's an approach that we face all of our conditioning, all of the places in which we think we understand life, all of our traumatized core perspectives in which we've protected and defended ourselves against what we think is dangerous to feel pain. I would like to have a connection with two or three people for whom what I've shared, the meditation and the reading, what I've just shared, any resonance, insights, or response.
I love the reading. It was just so beautiful and meaningful for me. And I'm appreciating your words afterwards about this training and kind of discipline and coming to this pain rather than avoiding what we expect it to be. And I have such sense of the gold available in doing this, and I'm grateful for the assistance in learning how. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
I had to take some moments with that because it wasn't just, there was just so much that resonated that I just wasn't sure where to even kind of start with it. But the reading I've been walking with a cancer diagnosis for almost a year now and treatments. The reading just so touched about the breaking open and being, to me the word was always, it's been about letting go. And when he, also the words about the potter, that's one of the things I worked with and had to let go. So there was just so much in the imagery of that whole piece that just really spoke to just in a difficult walk. But it's been so much of learning just to be present, to actually absolutely that, just the physicality of what's there and noticing when a storyline is trying to blow it bigger than it is. So there was just a lot there, Robert, that really just spoke to me.
Wonderful. Thank you. So I'd like to proceed now then. Part of what I want to share is some context from which our practice will follow. The words that I want to share has to do with, I use the term experiential understanding. For me, the word experience, I think the etymology of the word experience means to live through, and which is different than understanding the idea of something, an intellectual idea. So what I'm hoping to share will support an experiential understanding. So when we walk through something, then there's a deeper understanding of it. So for me, the understanding is about there is an experience that we have that we call pain. Much of what we experience in our painful experience is a function of this patterning, a conditioned patterning of how we function throughout life. I also want to make the distinction between physical pain and emotional pain. I am talking primarily about emotional pain and not physical pain. Although some of the principles can be applied to the experience of physical pain, I'm primarily talking about what we call emotional pain. And emotional pain can be anything that we experience that we regard as unwanted, difficult to experience, or we feel actually, even in emotional pain, there is often, and if we tune into it, I think always, a physicality that hurts. It actually hurts to be deeply disappointed or emotionally hurt in relation to a life event. To be in frustration or anger or fear, this is kind of emotional pain I'm talking about. And our emotional pain is often covered over or has an overlay of thought and story and evaluations. And I call that suffering as opposed to natural pain. So if you think of a situation that might be frustrating, I was talking to someone yesterday that has a relationship with her parents, an adult, in which her father and her mother have been living separately, they're divorced, and the father has so much more financial resources than the mother had less, doesn't have very much. And so they're elderly in their 70s, and this person I was speaking to was experiencing a lot of pain because she so much wanted her father, who had the resources, to be more generous and kind and support the mother in her need, who was really experiencing a lot of difficulty in life. A lot of it was based on the lack of financial resources that she had. So this person was experiencing the pain of frustration. And I was working with her on identifying the suffering part of the frustration and allowing her to shift into the natural pain of a clear emotion in regard to a beautiful need and value. So the frustration, the suffering mode, was tempered by a story that she had. She was angry and frustrated because she was telling herself that her father should help her mother out, and that he was selfish and materialistic. And those judgments, is when she's thinking that, she has an associated feeling in her body and in her emotions that shows up as anger, as a general constricting tightness and frustration. So when these kind of painful emotions are supported by judgmental, evaluative story and thinking, it shows up in the body as a constriction, and it shows up as suffering. And the focus is on what isn't there, what's wrong, rather than on what one is longing for, on the fullness. And so in working with this person, I worked with her in simply empathizing with the frustration and what her unmet values and needs are. And that shift allowed her to feel into the energy of how much she longed for what she called generosity or kindness. Just the kindness of recognizing that here was a person who was in his life who was experiencing distress in her life. And so the internal feeling of frustration and anger was one in which it was felt as a constriction based on the judgments that she had towards her father. And when she could shift into the need that she was having for kindness and really feel that she was so wanting to see support from her father to her mother, kindness, the recognition that her needs matter, something in her shifted. And the frustration and the anger shifted into sadness. So she feels sad, and she began to truly mourn the absence of what she holds dear in the situation. And so she was able to approach the experience, the painful experience in a way, and disengage from the story by empathizing with the deep underlying needs and values. That is the primary shift that takes place. And she was focusing on the body, allowing her body to relax, so touch into what she is so longing for, but is absent in the situation, but is present in her heart. So I'm going to pause there and just check with anybody who has any question or response to this. Is this somewhat of an example of what I mean by coming to this pain in a more open way? So just wondering if you have any response to this, if it helps you have a little bit more clarity what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is a great example. I appreciate this.
Yeah, okay, thank great. You. That's all. And so I just want to speak to one part of the origin of the tendency to feel pain, the tendency to, in our reactions. I think I spoke to this in the previous session, but it bears repeating because it's something I think we can, an understanding we can come to over and over again. So when we have a painful experience, I usually say particularly in the earlier part of our life, in our childhood, but this can happen almost at any part of our life. We have an experience that our body and our emotions and our system recoils because it doesn't meet important needs and values. There's something that we hold precious in our heart that we're wanting. I believe that all of us are wanting to have, to meet life in a way that supports us, in a way that supports our well-being, in a way that is in harmony with what we value. And when something doesn't happen in support of what we value and in support of our well-being, our system closes down and reacts. That reaction is pain. And it's either going to be natural pain or suffering, depending on whether we attribute a thought or a judgment or a story to it.
Yes, Robert, I don't know if this is the best time to be asking this question, but
yeah.
When you notice that you're with someone who is going into their thoughts or judgments or stories, do you point that out, or do you just hold space for to offer empathy at that point?
Well, I notice that your question is when you notice someone else in story, and I'll answer that in a moment, and what I'm primarily sharing about is when you notice yourself in this. This is the primary emphasis of what I'm sharing. I think it's important that I'd like you all to receive what I'm saying in terms of your own experience, your own thoughts, your own story. Having said that, my response to you would be, when you notice someone else that is in story and judgment evaluating, what's going on in you? Do you have a story about that? Do you have a thought that says they shouldn't be? So is there an inner space that you have of allowing simply in a non-judgmental space with respect to your noticing that they're in story or in judgment? So that would be the first place.
Thank you.
Then I think from there, you would respond, I think, in a different way than if you had a judgment or story about them being in judgment or story. You would be much more able to have an empathic space with them.
Yes.
Truly listen to their longing and their pain and their needs with an open heart.
I just felt myself slip to that other side, and this opening came up. Just as you said that, it was like, yes. Thank you.
Sure. There is a practice. I'm just going to make reference to it real quick. We're not going to go into the experience of it. We did it in the first or second class, I believe. It's actually inherent in the two exercises I'm wanting to address today. Actually, you can do this with any experience, whether you regard it as painful or non-painful, whatever the non-painful one would be, is that when we have an experience that we regard as emotionally painful, we can name it. It might be anger, could be fear, frustration, some kind of unease in your emotional field with respect to life, an event, or another person. So the practice is to draw your attention to the experience that you're calling pain. Is it fear? Is it just a pure thing that can only be addressed as pain, just hurts? And then feel it. And then notice that if you can tune into what can be called the pure physicality of the experience, without any images or associated with even the stimulus or trying to understand it, feel the physicality of it. When you can come to the physicality of the experience previously called pain, then we can come to the experience that, now this is through practice, I'm not suggesting that you are able to do that immediately, although you might be able to. Then we can come to the practice of that really in this energy there is no negative and no positive. It's all just life energy. There's maybe particular qualities to this energy. Maybe qualities of holding, of density, of tightness, burning, radiance, flow. Those are qualitative aspects, and they're not defined by the mind as good or bad, right or wrong. Because what happens with us, I believe, is when our conditioned mind tells us that there's emotional pain, usually there's an unconscious association that it's bad, it's wrong, I want it to end, I don't want to feel this, I want to feel better. And that is a characteristic of a deep habituation. So when we feel it, not as good or bad, right or wrong, but as just life energy that may feel tight. Maybe there's a searing quality to it. Maybe there's a heaviness that pushes down that even has a color to it. Then we can feel it as life. Something happens when we can feel just the physicality of the energy that I've noticed that eventually there is a softening and a letting it be the way it is. And let internal energy be the way it is, then there is an allowing and accepting of it, but we're allowing an energy. So the term self-acceptance isn't as meaningful as an allowing of the internal energy. So if I think I'm accepting someone else or not accepting someone else, the not accepting isn't so much I'm not accepting another person or their behavior, but I'm not in an open flow of my internal experience in relationship or in response to what I observe in another. This is, in my view, really an important distinction. Is there anybody for whom this is not clear?
When I utilize this process, I've noticed the more and more I practice it, particularly with things that are what I would consider more minor irritations, frustrations, everyday little quick triggers, I've noticed that the more I become aware of when I'm in the beauty of needs, feeling tone is in my body, the quicker I can associate the trigger by what I feel by it. It's almost like you get this quick jaggedness in your belly. It seems to show up there a lot, particularly with irritation and anger and things. But with those, as I go into the breathing and accepting of it, I find that I don't want to go into like trying to resource exactly which need or it, anything it is, because it all just seems to be, it seems inconsequential to even try to name it. It just feels like, okay, whoa, I'm back in that zone. So part of my question is that it seems though that there's a different time. There are times when I notice that something is like really big, or I get so massively triggered that it keeps coming back and I sit with it for a long time, and then it seems like almost like I just have to go and then sit and either with someone or by myself process through right through all the way to the end where I can really get clear on the thoughts and everything and then get to the needs so that it becomes like much, much more in my understanding process is the best way I can put it. So is that more because of it's a core belief attached to it?
I mean, with the second experience.
Yeah, with the second.
I don't know. That would be my best guess, given your description of your experiences. But I really don't know until I mean, the only way I could know and you would know is as we explore this and that it emerges with this clarity. But it would be my best guess that that's what's going on.
Okay.
And so in the first case where you described something that would be relatively minor, not a very strong or intense trigger, you come to a shifting or a softening, it sounds like. Something releases, perhaps a holding, a resistance, perhaps some level of judgment. And then you're feeling some more of a flow of an energy. And you said that I'm not moved to resource whatever needs are there. Now, when you said that, I'm guessing that you are resourcing in terms of trying to name it, trying to figure out what the need is. Is that accurate?
Yes. So, to even go into my head to name it feels contradictory to the experiencing of just getting back into the flow. It's so automatic that my breath and my awareness and acceptance of it, it's fast.
I understand that it goes really quick. And so what I want to say is the resourcing of the need is different in the work that I'm suggesting. In other words, we don't go into our head to figure out what the need is. We follow the energy and listen to the energy. It comes from the longing. And then you can ask yourself, not what is the need, but in this situation, what is it that I hold dear? What is precious? What am I longing for? And then you listen to the energy, not to your head.
So it's not about the word around it. It's really experiencing that space.
And then the word, the energy grabs the word, so to speak. I don't know if that makes any sense. Then the expression becomes more poetic. And it's not just
so
one
it comes
nerve.
From you.
Yes, from the heart. There's a deep trusting in trusting the energy and the expression of the energy. So I'm hoping that would be complete for the moment. I've noticed a number of other hands up that I'd like to address.
Yes,
that okay?
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that sounded so wonderful and great to me. I call it intuition, and it's something that comes from within that's connected with life energy that has no words. When I try to get the words for it, then I go into my head and then I capture thoughts. But it's so much more than thoughts. It's an energy all by itself, and I call it intuition coming from my heart rather than from my head.
Yeah. There's something that I very much resonate with your experience on how you characterize it. One of the things that I've discovered is this energy, there is an intelligence in the energy itself which is different than my head-only intelligence. So I listen to this intelligence. It's an intelligent heart. It's an intelligent life energy. And this comes with work and with training to be able to decipher what is this, what is my heart longing for, and to really trust whatever expression emerges from this inquiry. So I just wanted to add that bit of it that has been very important to me. I'd like to move on. What I'd like to do is, if there's someone who would be willing to have me guide you through an exercise on how we meet pain, call this an exercise on mourning. And so what I'd like is to do, if there's someone willing to share an experience that has a degree of intensity, but not one that I would say that is this super triggering event. It's not that we couldn't work through that, but I want primarily to work with someone who of something that is real and alive, but not has the degree of intensity that it would just take a little bit more time. So are you volunteering?
I am.
Can you just give me a one or two sentence description?
I'm just recently divorced, and it was a very beautiful experience. We're still very close friends, and we took a long time to get through it together. And the day he left for Ecuador was really hard for me. And so it comes up, the pain and the joy and the excitement and the beauty and the pain just keep flowing in and out back and forth all the time.
Okay. I think that's enough for me to get an idea of it. What I'd like to do, I think you've already described it. The first way to start this process, usually we do an inner process or we can be guided by another person, is you name something that happened. I call it a loss or an impending loss. So you gave me a background that you were divorced from your husband and there were things, parts of it that were painful, parts of it that were joyful. Then something happened. There was a triggering event where he went to Ecuador. Is this correct? This is what triggered this experience.
Yes.
Okay. And so the first thing we can do is, what is the first thing that comes to your awareness in terms of intensity? Is it feelings? Is it thoughts? Is there a story? That's the first thing. What first reaction? Right now, not what you reacted to then, but present moment.
Present moment is a tightness in my chest.
Tightness in your chest. So there's a sensation. Okay, so just be with it. Everything that comes up that you share, there is the asking to be with it. I'll be asking you, guiding you, inviting you simply to be with the tightness. And allow that. And in addition to the tightness, is there an emotional feelings or any thoughtful, any reactions or story in your mind?
Well, there's tears in the back of my eyes and...
Yeah.
The thought that comes is, I let him go.
Okay.
I let him go.
Yeah. I hear the thought, and there's sadness in there too. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. So in your experience, is this a loss, a feeling of loss?
Yes.
Yeah. I let him go. I'm wondering, sometimes when I hear a thought like that, I think there's a more subtle thought underneath or after it. Is it, I let him go, and what other thought?
I wasn't enough.
Okay. I let him go, and I wasn't enough. Yeah. So just name it and say it. And then are you in the experience of I wasn't enough? Are you feeling deep regret or sadness?
I feel a lot of sadness.
Yeah. Okay.
Not regrets, really. Just sadness that I wasn't enough and at the same time that I was too much. They're both there.
So I'm hearing I wasn't enough and I was too much. Can you hear those as judgments? You're evaluating yourself as too much or not enough.
Yeah.
So the part of this process is to allow the judgments to transform into something you so value, but that you were not able to fulfill. So I'm not enough, I'm sometimes too much, or I'm not enough. Are you feeling sad because you're feeling the loss of the missed opportunity to have shown up differently in the relationship? Shown up in a way that could have met him.
I couldn't. I know that I couldn't show up
any
differently than I did.
Yeah. So in this, you recognize that you were doing the very best you could.
Yes, as was he.
As was he.
I feel like the longing and the mourning together is like the mourning is this loss of this. We still have a great relationship, but it's transformed and the loss of what it was and I wanted it to continue to be. And at the same time, this longing to have somebody really love me fully as a woman in a way that he wasn't able to.
So there's a loss of something that you long for in the relationship, and there's a longing to have a quality of intimacy in your life.
Yes.
In a relationship. So I'm hearing that there is something that you lost brings sadness to you that is actually precious and beautiful. This longing for intimacy, closeness, that you, while you recognize that you both did whatever you were able to, the best you knew how to, given your resources, there seems to be an acceptance in that.
Yes.
Yes. When I reflect that, how do you feel in the body when I say acceptance? How is your acceptance felt in the body?
Well, I noticed just even as you said that word that some of the tightness in my chest relaxed a little bit.
Yeah, okay. In other words, this is the way it is. You both did the very best you knew how to. And I imagine there's acceptance, and I'm wondering if there's sadness in that also.
Yeah, there is. We email each other every day and share our feelings, and there's so much to be grateful for and so much sadness.
There's both. It sounds like you have the capacity to feel that which you're grateful for, something very full, and the sadness. Sadness of the possibility of a full love and full intimacy.
Sadness that that isn't going to happen with him, and there's fear in there that it never will with anyone.
Okay. So I'd like you to hear the difference between the sadness, because the loss with him, with your former husband, and the fear. Can you see that you're thinking about the future?
Yeah.
And that brings fear.
Mm-hmm.
Just want you to notice the feedback I'm giving you is a reflection on you're noticing, you're thinking about the future that it's never going to happen. You're making a prediction. And with that prediction, you feel fear. Do you notice that?
Yeah, it's just staying in the beauty of the longing is so much more clean than going into the mind and the future fear.
Yeah, but even in the mind, we don't want to push that away. There's a principle here that in every thought, every judgment, there's a thread of energy to a longing. So we want to look at the fear right now in terms of you're afraid that you might not get this kind of relationship in the future. In this fear, are you longing for open possibilities? Are you longing for hope? Longing to deeply trust in life and in your heart?
I never thought of it that way.
Well, I'm wondering. I'm wondering to see if the longing is in you, if it resonates as on a feeling level.
I'm longing. The longing feels like to be so accepted. My thought is that I want to be so accepted and loved as a woman by a man, but really it's like by life. It is a process somehow.
Yeah. So just notice I heard a shift that accepted and loved by a man. Then I heard you say by life.
Oh.
Is that much larger, more encompassing?
Yes.
Yeah. As you say that and I reflected back, I'm curious how you feel in the body. What is the energy like?
Well, I notice I have my hand up on my, kind of just below my, between my throat and my heart, and I'm feeling kind of this soft expansion, this creeping.
Okay. So just be with that for a moment. I'm wondering if you experience this softness, warmth, as the life in you, your heart's longing. Now, I want, just for your benefit and for the benefit of others who are listening, there's a distinction that I make between longing and seeking. Longing goes into the heart in the present moment. Seeking, it goes from the mind into the future, seeking an outcome, an object, or a strategy. But the longing is in this moment, your heart's longing.
When I sit with it that way, it turns into acceptance, my longing it's the beauty of it. This fills me and just in that present.
Thank you. Okay. So is it okay with you that we can bring this to a completion?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Yes. I'd like to take a few minutes, if we will, before I'm going to suggest the next practice is that we break into pairs and do a similar shared exercise on, I'll say more about it at that point, but right now, just would like to know if there's anybody upon hearing my working, if you have any feeling response to it, how you feel, what are you moved by?
Yeah, I'm noticing myself. I'm kind of, you know, being with the two of you in this process that I'm, you know, sensing my own calmness, sense of peace and fullness and spaciousness. I'm sort of savoring that.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, so much of this practice, I call it mourning, and for me, I have come to the clarity that it is, for me, it is essential for a spiritual life practice. I regard my whole life as a life practice. That life for me is rhythms and pulsations of life events and experiences coming in and going through me. And moment by moment, I have a different life experience. And I'm not going to go into the detail, but one of the life experiences I have quite commonly is with my 9-year-old granddaughter. And her life can be quite challenging. It's really wonderful in many ways. Her father is, in my evaluation, incredibly loving and nurturing and supportive of her and doing the very best he can to make sure all of her needs are met. And then she runs into challenges in terms of not being supported by the school and her learning needs. She has some learning challenges based on brain surgery she had when she was a child. And so because her needs are not always met and the school doesn't respond that would really meet her in what she absolutely needs, it certainly triggers my own judging mind. I can acknowledge that about how I can judge the school and the school district and the teachers for, you know, judging them as unconscious, unkind, all of that. But when it gets to the mourning part of it, I tune in to the love and the beauty and the preciousness in my granddaughter and her needs for support in difficult challenges. And if part of it is my heart just breaks, it breaks open. And first of all, I would explore, even before this, say, well, is there anything I can do? I don't just necessarily want to accept loss carte blanche without examining. Is there something I can do? After I examine whether there's some action I can do that can support the person in their needs. Then, if it's just a loss, then I experience it as a loss. There's nothing I can do in this situation that I've so far. So I feel the brokenheartedness, and there's a softness, there's a sinking feeling in my heart. It's very tender, very fragile, raw. There's tears on the edge there. But the heart of it, at the heart of it, when I penetrate the tenderness, shakiness, and the vulnerability of my mourning, there's just the beauty of the love that I have in my heart. And I feel it as a warmth. I feel the sadness as a warmth, but I feel the beauty and the love as a warmth also. And this energy nurtures me. It feeds me. It feeds my being. I don't have the words for it. So for me, mourning is not something I've learned turn away from something that's difficult, especially if I get lost in my judgments. So it's a softening quality, but in the softening there is a strength and a clarity that is just life enriching. So just wanted to share that little bit of my own, just a taste of my own personal experience and how absolutely essential mourning is for me. I would like to create the opportunity for you to actually engage in some practice with another person, as we have done in the past. And so I'm hoping that you have accessed the handout on the exercise on mourning. And I'm going to ask you, when you get into the room, into the phone contact with your partner, one person will go at a time. The other person can offer empathic support or any kind of support that your partner wants. I'm just going to go over, there's very few steps to this, but it's very similar to the work that I did earlier. So the first thing is you identify, choose an experience that's real, that you can feel, that would be something, what an unmet need, a loss. And then go into the experience. What comes into your experience? Any feelings, any thoughts, any story? One thing I did not do in the demonstration is ask, is there a young or wounded energy in there? Sometimes a very young part comes up. The intention is to be present empathically, to allow the unfolding of whatever arises, to allow the thoughts to be named, allow the feelings to be expressed, and the listener or the guide can primarily offer an empathic support, and then at some point, when there's been some empathy exchange, in the opening and in the allowing, you can ask or guide into, is there a longing to feel the unmet needs, but also to feel the beauty of the unmet needs, and also to make room for the sadness, to not push it away or move through it, but to actually allow the energy of the sadness to fill you if it's there. And then from the sadness to allow the touching into what is valued, what is precious, what is important in the unmet value or need. So we'll just go ahead. So it's just a touching into. So you can begin when you're ready. This would be a time, maybe just for take a few seconds to connect, check in with yourself after doing this practice, and just notice what came from the practice for you, if you can acknowledge the experience and what came from the experience for you. Just notice if there was something, a shift, a clarity, or if you're left with something that was unclear and you're maybe wanting some guidance or some understanding so that you can revisit the experience in a way with more clarity or more guidance. Just whatever is there. I'd like to ask for any questions or feedback or sharing.
Yes, Robert. I just want to thank you for this exercise. It reinforced and clarified what I am longing for, that is harmony, kindness, understanding, and need to be heard. What also I like is to come for a resolution of the issue.
A resolution of the issue?
Right. And I also appreciate your sharing that each judgment is tied with some longing.
You could connect with that, your own experience.
I just want to appreciate. Thank you.
Yes, great. Thank you very much.
Hi, Steph. Feeling that came up for me, and I don't know if this is a pure feeling, was guilt, that I had guilt about a decision that I made and honoring my needs. So how would you work with that?
Glad you're bringing that up, because that would give me time to spend a couple of minutes with you on this. I'm going to ask you, now, guilt, my understanding, has should statements into it. Are you feeling guilty about something you think you should have done or shouldn't have done?
Yes.
Okay, and just, can you say what that statement is? I feel guilty because I'm thinking I should or shouldn't.
It's both, that I should tolerate this friend's behavior and that, no,
yeah,
I shouldn't tolerate it. I have both things going on.
Yeah, so when you think you should tolerate it, I mean you're doing something other than tolerating it. Is that true?
Yes, if I think I should tolerate it, it means that I've made a decision in which I'm not telling her that I'm not tolerating it.
All right. And so when you think you shouldn't tolerate it, you're thinking you shouldn't tolerate, you're doing something other than not tolerating it.
Right.
I'm trying to connect. You behave in two different ways with this friend.
I'm torn about my decision to back off of the friendship because I was repeatedly uncomfortable with this pattern of behavior.
Okay. So often I just suggest a shift in the language that implies a shift in the guilt. Say the should statement again.
I should tolerate her showing up late every time we make a plan.
Mm-hmm. Now say that in terms of, I would like to tolerate her. I want to tolerate her.
I want to tolerate her showing up later than we agreed.
Okay. And if I was able to tolerate her showing up, that would meet my value or need for what?
Maybe compassion or flexibility.
Compassion. Let me just guess. Is it you'd like to be accepting of her?
Yeah.
When she shows up late. So your need for acceptance would be met if you allow her without judging her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What does that feel like to connect to it in this way? How do you feel when you connect to your need for acceptance? You just want to accept her when she shows up late.
What comes up for me is discomfort because I'm choosing to accept her over me. Like, there's this idea of, like, I'm accepting her and not me.
Yeah. So that means you're accepting her, meaning you're considering that her needs matter, but that in this situation, your needs aren't mattering.
Yes.
And you're not valuing your own needs.
Right.
So I'm wondering if you're wanting to value her needs and your needs, both,
mm-hmm.
as fully as possible.
Yes.
Yes. So can you say that in your own words?
I'm wanting to have respect for her needs and my needs, something like that. I was hoping, and I'm saying in a past tense, was hoping that we could find a way to address her needs and mine, but we didn't.
Yeah. So that means that you're wishing you had had some honest, authentic exchange with her, and you didn't.
Yes.
Wherein you bring in the caring for yours and hers, and you want to have a relationship where this happens. But you didn't.
Yes, we actually did have an authentic exchange, and we had a plan, and then the next time we had agreed to connect, she did the same thing that she did in the past, so there was no shift.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what that is, but that was very disappointing.
Yeah, you felt disappointed because you were wanting her to follow through on what she said she was going to do. You really value follow through.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm wondering where you are now when you think of this exchange and this friendship, this relationship, in terms of is there or is there not? Is the guilt there or is it shifted in some way?
It's shifted somewhat because when I heard you say I really value follow through, I could feel the preciousness of that desire in my relationships in general.
Yeah, it's a general value that you have, that in your relationships you really want to give and receive consideration and respect for your time and the other person's time.
Yes.
Yeah, which in this case, the consideration would show up as this person would follow through on what they said they were going to.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So that helped you to shift.
Yes, it did.
Okay, great. My understanding of guilt is that I feel guilty because I'm thinking I should do something or I shouldn't do something. And when I can find and connect to the underlying needs and values, then it will always shift my feeling of guilt into something else. So I'm going to move on from this, if it's okay with you, and you have your hand up.
In an interaction like this, I find myself with this huge, huge feeling of compassion and care about really supporting the other person. And at the same time, there's a level of anxiety behind it of not knowing what to say or not quite knowing where to go. So as I sat and felt into that, it's like just this incredible balance between wanting, it's a mourning for both. I'm mourning that this person didn't have a sense of coming to clarity or shift that moved towards that we didn't get to. So I just feel this really, really deep sadness of like this mourning of the loss of what didn't happen, you know, the closure, the feeling of that it moved through and that there was a big sigh of, you know, for all of us involved.
So what I'm hearing is that you were feeling or are feeling a tremendous amount of sadness because you care. You were working with partner and you were wanting to come to an integration, a resolution, a fullness in what he was experiencing. And you're sad because you notice that didn't happen. You long for that kind of care.
Yeah.
And so the sadness, I heard some other things, but I'm just wondering for this piece of it right now, I was sensing that this is the predominant experience. What is it like for you right now just to be in this space, to know that you value that and perhaps could be supported in the future with more time? But given that this is the case right now, this is your experience, how are you just in this moment with the sadness?
I'm in a really good place.
Thank you. You know, as you're sharing, what comes to me is the value that I have learned around a quality of acceptance in my life, the recognition that as life flows, that sometimes it works for me, sometimes my needs are met, and then sometimes they're not. And there's something quite profound in the degree of acceptance of what happens when my not resisting life, when it doesn't work, and I can mourn it, allows me to have a full heart, and then I can have a full heart when I celebrate life in the joy or in the fulfillment of that. So there's a flow of an openness in the mourning, the sadness, and the joy. It's a whole practice. I'd like to call attention to the other process. It's called compassionately embracing. I think it has in parentheses short version. I have that because I often pair it up with a longer version of that, and I find that the shorter version is simpler. Right now, I'm not going to suggest this as a practice, but I want to suggest this as work and process you can do between now and the next class as homework, so to speak. While it is written in 8 different steps, as you may experience already, that the organicity of life experience, of our internal experience, isn't always that clean and neat and sequential. It is organic, can move from one dimension to the other. But it usually does start with the identification of an observation, a stimulus for an experience in which you could say you were triggered, and the description of this in objective factual language. These are important elements that are in the exercise on mourning, but it goes into a little bit more specificity. Step number 7 says receive empathy of the need and the longing from others in the group, because this is an exercise that is designed to be done with one or two others. If you do this on your own, just know that step number 7 isn't necessarily relevant. But I'd like you all to practice this process between now and then. And it doesn't have to be practiced with a huge trigger, but it can be. So any degree of stimulation, let's say. And I think it's a good practice to bring into an everyday practice, because so much of the importance that I found is bringing attention to the bodily felt feeling and sensing sensations and the felt physicality of our emotional feelings. Also the ability to unpack all of the judgments and the thinking and the story that we tell ourselves about our experience. So much of the story is about the past or the future, and the reason that the body is important is because it brings the attention to the present moment experiencing, and I think that is the most important element, that the healing takes place only in the present moment. So I wanted to mention this as a way to practice, and I'm hoping that you're able to do it. And if there's any questions that you have about this in the interim between now and next time, you can take note of them. We have a few minutes in closing. I'm wondering if there's one or two people, I would love to hear any sharing for the value that this class had for you.
Thank you. It's another thank you for giving us the opportunity to be able to resource what's within ourselves, that I forget about it at times. The exercises keep bringing me to the awareness of what's within myself. And as I said to my partner, I feel like I'm growing into belonging to myself. Thank you. Thank you.
That's I love rich. That. Thank you. I love the phrase, growing into belonging to myself, with myself.
Yeah, I want to express gratitude for the overall calming of my nervous system, which was in a very agitated state before this call, and I'm noticing how connecting to the life force energy is so precious and so powerful in settling my nervous system, so I'm really grateful for that. Thank you.
Great. Wonderful. I'm really glad to hear how it was meeting people's needs here. And so I'm hoping you do continue in the practice and continue to support yourself in your own life force, in your own well-being. And so I look forward to our meeting again. So thank you all, and take care, and we'll connect with you again next week. Bye-bye.